The Guardian.
There are issues across the world where people are concerned about invasive species and species that haven't existed before. And in terms,
they're a really successful invader in the UK and in Europe.
So it's not likely that a natural predator is going to be consuming lionfish enough to control the population.
All the results from the IUCN Red List really demonstrate to us that we are in a sixth extinction event. We are losing species more than 100 to 10,000 times faster than the natural background extinction rates. This time, the threats pushing species to extinction come from us, from humans. So unsustainable use, illegal hunting, habitat destruction, invasive alien species, and climate change are just some of the many threats to species. But this also means that we can do something about it.
But what? What can we do about invasive species? In many places across the world, the solution has been to kill them. Rats are one example. Introduced into places like New Zealand and South Georgia Island, they have pushed native bird populations to the brink of extinction. But should we kill the invasives in favour of the locals?
I think people think conservation is about nurturing all of life, that conservation is about conserving everything, no matter what it is. But the reality is often very different. The reality on the ground is often bloody and raw and difficult. Conservation is full of these very difficult ethical decisions, killing one thing to preserve another. It's not an easy world to live in.
But could there be a sort of compromise? Could we save a local species without killing the invasive one? Last month, scientists in Australia announced that they had worked out how to save a native marsupial from eating the deadly and invasive cane toad without killing the amphibians. Could this type of initiative be the best of both worlds? I'm Nicola Davis, and this is Science Weekly.
My name is Mary Colwell. I'm a writer, a producer, and author of Curlew Moon. I also do some broadcasting and conservation work.
Mary, talk me through what we mean by an invasive species.
An invasive species is something that's arrived in a place which shouldn't really be here, that isn't natural to the natural sort of biota, if you like, of the place. So the grey squirrel coming over from America is an invasive species, or Himalayan balsam coming over from the Himalayas is an invasive species. It's not arrived here naturally, it's actually been introduced.
And what sort of impacts do these sort of species have?
Some of them just seem to sort of melt away into the background and we just live with them. And others, though, start immediately competing with native creatures or plants. And so you can have quite a devastating impact from actually specific outcompeting or introducing diseases or destroying the habitat that things live in. Various ways that they can impact on native biology.
And so what sort of strategies are used to tackle these species? I know that there's been a lot, for example, going on about trying to tackle Japanese knotweed with limited success. I just wondered what sort of strategies are being used.
Various strategies. It depends on what we're talking about. You can either go out with a gun and try to shoot the things if they're big enough. So, for example, the reindeer that were on South Georgia were all shot. They shouldn't have been there, and they were taken away so that they could put down rat poison to kill all the rats on South Georgia, and the rats were eating the eggs and chicks of seabirds. So you can either go about and directly kill something with poison or with a gun, or you can do something more sneaky and many times more problematic, which is introduce another animal or organism which attacks the one you want to get rid of. But as these invasive species arrive in very different habitats, it just really depends.
And what are the drawbacks here? I mean, it sounds like very labour intensive, presumably hugely expensive.
Absolutely. There's never an easy answer to this. So it always includes a lot of research to find out what's the best way. usually quite a lot of people power on the ground. It might mean introducing chemicals or traps into an environment, which may then have collateral damage. And very often, getting rid of an invasive species does include killing other species alongside, which you don't mean to do, just literally collateral damage. It's never easy, and it's always better to try to stop this happening in the first place, although, of course, hindsight's a great thing.
Killing, trapping, relocating, these are all labour-intensive, expensive, and often don't eradicate the invasive species entirely, but temporarily reduce the numbers. But how long can you continue to kill, say, grey squirrels? Forever? And at what cost? Grey squirrels were brought over from America as a fashionable addition to British gardens and estates. They then outcompeted the local red squirrel population. But the fact is, we brought them here. So should the greys suffer for what was ultimately our mistake?
I mean, we have created these problems. It's usually us that have brought these things over in ships or crates or containers or deliberately introduced them and created mayhem. And therefore, it's us to sort out. It's up to us. And it's a moral choice what we do. And I think as in killing any animals, really, you have to weigh a cost-benefit analysis. Is the benefit of, say, killing foxes, cats, rats, whatever it is, in the end going to create a better situation than not killing them? Because by killing those animals, obviously you're often inflicting pain and suffering on individual creatures. And so you want to avoid that if at all possible. But sometimes that's not possible if you want to see a greater good.
Is it misguided? I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate a little here, but is it misguided to think that we can somehow return nature to some previous state? I mean, are there those that argue, for example, that we should just, you know, let a new ecosystem evolve? Or is that sort of a very unacceptable viewpoint?
No. There are certainly people who think that. And they feel that, you know, just because it's not the animal's fault that we've introduced it to a place. And so that's hard luck. I mean, you know, it is wrong to kill, and therefore we should just leave these things to work themselves out. And of course, you know, ecosystems and sort of the makeup of flora and fauna have changed always through time. And so they're just saying, well, it's just another mechanism by which things change, so we should just let things get on with it. And then on the other hand, there are those that say, no, this is a mess we have to clear up and we can't return to some halcyon days. I mean, that's a strange concept anyway. What point do you choose to go back to? And so it's always a matter of weighing things up and deciding. And there are people who think always the cost is too high and we should therefore just leave things to get on with it.
That's a dangerous. How we manage invasive species is something of a balancing act. And as a growing body of research shows that animals have emotions, intelligence, and experience pain, some say the ethical considerations are growing ever more complicated. If you were a conservationist, what would you do? Would you kill one type of squirrel to save another? Or would you sit back and let nature take its course?
I think people think conservation is about nurturing all of life and that that conservation is about conserving everything, no matter what it is. And that's a lovely idea to have, isn't it? But the reality is often very different. The reality on the ground is often bloody and raw and difficult. Conservation is full of these very difficult ethical decisions, killing one thing to preserve another. It's not an easy world to live in, conservation. And, you know, we need to be real. If we really want to answer and address these big ethical issues that we're facing increasingly, and we will face them increasingly with climate change and population increase and growing food, we need to square up to what it means to be a conservationist and to have a real courage when it comes to making hard decisions, but not sweep them under the carpet and pretend they don't happen, to be open and honest. Thank you.
But could we put right our wrongs and protect our native species without harming the animals we introduced? In some cases, there seem to be situations where it is possible. There is an emerging science called compassionate conservation. This has emerged from the tension between the welfare of invasive species and saving native species. We'll be looking at one project to save a marsupial from eating a deadly invasive by making cane toad sausages.
What we do is make these little cane toad sausages, which is a bit of cane toad meat with a chemical that makes you feel sick, and they have a bad night, and then after that they hopefully don't eat cane toads anymore.
We'll be back in a minute after this break.
In this week's Guardian Books podcast, we hear from two novelists who have taken inspiration from Greek myth. Daisy Johnson invokes Oedipus in Everything Under, and Michael Hughes has transported the Iliad to Northern Ireland during the Troubles in his novel Country. And The Guardian's chief culture writer, Charlotte Higgins, joins Claire and I in the studio to discuss all things classical, plus what's been going on at Edinburgh Book Festival this year. Tune in to The Guardian Books podcast.
Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Nicola Davis. Before the break, we looked at the issue of invasive species and how their success has, in many cases, caused the demise of native creatures. Often, these invasives are managed by reducing their numbers, and we began to look at the ethics and morals of killing one species to save another. Should conservation be so bloody? A new area of science is emerging though, something called compassionate conservation, which hopes to tackle invasive species without cruelty. Next, we're looking at one case study, the quoll.
Ella, let's kick off. First thing, can you introduce yourself with your name, your position and your affiliation, just so that we've got that how it should be?
Yeah, I'm Ella Kelly. I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Melbourne.
Great. So, Ella, tell me a bit about cane toads. So these are a big problem in Australia. Some people might have heard stories about this, but let's just recap. How did these creatures wind up in Australia?
Well, they were actually introduced by humans, like a lot of the invasive species that we have here in Australia, but they were put here on purpose. So they were brought over from South America via Hawaii to control a problem that the cane farmers were having with the cane beetle. So it was decimating their sugarcane crops, and they thought that they could bring this toad over and the toad would eat all the cane beetles and solve all their problems. But unfortunately for them, the cane toads actually really enjoyed Australia, and they spread out, started eating other things, and they breed prolifically. So we just have a mountain of cane toads in Australia now.
Sounds a little like the old lady who swallowed a fly. You try to control one thing with another thing and it all goes a little bit pear-shaped.
Yes, a little bit like that. So now the cane toads, they started off in far north Queensland, and they've spread south and west across Australia, and now they're encroaching on Western Australia across the Kimberley.
And do they have any kind of predator? I mean, I'm assuming not. Why have they been able to proliferate so much?
Well, they don't have any predators. That's the problem. So the problem is that they've got these poison glands on their backs, and none of our native Australian animals are used to this certain type of poison. It's a really strong neurotoxin that basically leads to cardiac arrest and death really, really quickly. And our native predators, so our goannas, snakes, freshwater crocodiles, they aren't aware that the cane toads have this poison. They've never seen something like this before, so they unknowingly attack the toads and get a lethal hit of the poison, and they die almost immediately.
This has been causing numbers to nosedive for natives of many species across the country. One that's been hard hit is a creature called the quoll.
Well, the first thing I should say is that they're really adorable, so you should Google them. So squalls are basically, they're small marsupials, kind of like a possum but carnivorous. Sometimes they're referred to as a native cat. They've got big black eyes, big nose, because they only hunt at night, so they need those senses to be heightened. They've got these spots on their back for camouflage.
Ella's research group have tried all sorts to curb the decline of quolls. They've even tried training them not to eat cane toads.
So what we do is make these little cane toad sausages, which is a bit of cane toad meat with a chemical that makes you feel sick, and they have a bad night, and then after that they hopefully don't eat cane toads anymore.
However,
the practical implications of getting a sausage out to as many quolls as possible in the Australian outback is just logistically a bit of a nightmare, so we're having a bit problems with that.
So Ella and her group began to look for other, less labour-intensive solutions.
What we found was that there were populations in Queensland that were persisting alongside toads for the past 70 or 80 years. Originally, we thought that this was probably because they weren't attacking toads. We didn't know for sure. We knew that they hadn't evolved a resistance to the toxin. So over the last 3 years, I've spent investigating this and trying to find out what this behaviour actually is.
Ella, talk me through this project. So was this involving taking quolls from Queensland or from elsewhere in the country? And were they already savvy to the toads?
So what we did is we found some populations that were still kicking on in Queensland, and I went out in 2015 and collected a few of those from the wild and brought them into captivity. But alongside those, we also brought in some quolls who were toad naive, is what I call them. So they didn't know anything about toads. They were from a toad-free area. And we brought both of those groups into captivity so we could compare their behaviours in a controlled environment.
I see. And what did you find? Just talk me through what happened.
So I gave them non-lethal parts of the toad to just measure what they would do.
And predictably, the toad-naive quolls ate the cane toad. But the ones that had been living alongside the amphibians avoided it. They didn't eat the cane toad meat. The next question to unpick was this. Is this something quolls learn from their parents, or is it in their genes? Is it nature or nurture?
Was innate or genetic? So what we did was we bred the toad smart quolls in captivity and looked at their offspring who were raised in completely toad-free environments to measure whether they had this innate toad smart behaviour or whether they needed to learn it in the wild.
And what was the upshot?
So we found out that it's actually an innate genetic behaviour that is passed down through the generations. So as long as you have at least one toad smart parent, you are also far less likely to attack a cane toad than if you don't. What this means is that the quolls have learnt or evolved this behaviour over the last 70 years. It's been rapidly selected for in Queensland because the threat of the cane toad is so strong.
What's interesting is that other species are adapting too.
So we've had birds of prey that have learnt to pick up the toads and drop them from a height, and they only eat the tongue and the non-poisonous bits of the toads. So they've behaviourally changed how they forage. We've had snakes that have evolved smaller jaw sizes so that they can't actually attack a lethal-sized toad. And the quolls, which is what I work on, which have just learnt not to attack toads altogether.
And so what happens now? Do you take some of the Queensland quolls and release them elsewhere to hope that those genes will mix with other wild populations to help to give the quoll a chance of bouncing back?
Yeah, that's exactly the idea. So we know that this toad smart behaviour is present in wild populations, but it's just not nearly as common enough as we need it to be for the quolls to survive. So around 95% of populations will go extinct when toads arrive. So we want to decrease that number, have more populations survive. So what we could do was introduce some of these Queensland genes that have this toad smart behaviour into threatened populations ahead of the cane toad front or areas where the cane toad has already decimated the quolls and help boost them and increase their chances of adapting to the cane toad.
This sounds like a really smart way to manage invasive species, a way that's not cruel, but gives natives a fighting chance. That's it for Science Weekly. A special thanks to our guests Ella Kelly and Mary Colwell. You can find a link to Mary's new book, Curlew Moon, on our website, as well as links to an upcoming Guardian Live event where Adam Rutherford will be exploring the science of identity. Who are we? Tickets are on sale now. You can find a link on theguardian.com/podcasts. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can tweet at Guardian Audio or email scienceweekly@theguardian.com. Until next time, goodbye from me and the rest of the team.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.